Hi, I'm Yusuf Zine. My latest TVO Today podcast is on how a Canadian ends up in a Chinese prison and if he's even alive. Listen and subscribe to Extradition, available April 24th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, everyone, to the On Poly podcast. I'm Steve Paikin.
And I'm John Michael McGrath.
Ontario will enter the first stage of its reopening plan on Friday. And yes, that's earlier than expected. What will that mean for businesses and your weekend plans? We'll discuss that. Also, less than a year from today, Ontarians will be heading to the polls for the province's 43rd general election. As we've all learned recently, a lot can change in a year. Where do things stand now? Plus, the legislature has wrapped up for the summer, and we'll take a look at some of the bills that passed that you might have missed. It's Tuesday, June the 8th, 2021, so let's get to it. Well, JMM, however your past weekend was, we can now say you'll have more options for the next one. The government announced on Monday that Ontario is going to enter stage one of its reopening plan on Friday, June 11th. That's several days earlier than initially planned. This is, I presume, unambiguously good news for a change?
The short version is that things are getting better faster than anticipated, driven by vaccinations and, some of these continuing public health measures. Just as a for example, on Monday, Ontario reported just 525 new cases of COVID-19. Mondays are usually low in our case counts, but that is still the lowest number of new cases we've seen since September of last year. So, things are moving well. The province has also moved up its vaccination schedule so that people over 70 or those who got their first shots before April 18th can start booking their second shots as of Monday. That is also substantially earlier than expected. So the government clearly feels that, we as a province have got a good wind in our sails for once, and they are ready to start reopening a few days early. They had talked about waiting until June 14th, so they're moving it up about 3 days early so that, maybe people can have some drinks on a patio this weekend if they can find a table.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good right now, actually. So let's nail this down. Stage one means what in terms of what people will now be allowed to do?
So we discussed the whole three-stage reopening plan, I believe, 2 or 3 weeks ago now. And people may remember, stage one is still, you could fairly call it, still very tightly controlled. Most indoor activities are still either prohibited or very tightly controlled. But a lot of outdoor activities start to become legal again. I mentioned finding a patio somewhere, dining and drinking outdoors become legal. Outdoor fitness classes, outdoor religious services, outdoor pools and zoos, and campgrounds and overnight camping in provincial parks are allowed. Day camps can open, but overnight summer camps cannot open yet.
Now, I'm asking this next question for a friend. There's no self-interest here at all, okay? I just want to put that on the record. Are indoor haircuts allowed yet?
That comes in stage two, so not yet, not as of Friday.
How about outdoor haircuts?
Are you asking me to come over to your backyard with a set of clippers, Steve?
No. As I say, I'm asking for a friend. I'm not asking for myself. I mean, it's a coincidence I haven't had a haircut in 4 months, but really, this has nothing to do with me. Okay. How long will we be in stage one before we get to move on to stage two?
The plan, as the government announced it, was that we would spend no less than 21 days between stages, giving plenty of time for the government to be confident that, as we open up different parts of the economy, you don't get a massive spike in new cases. But if we're honest, I think the government is very likely to cut stage one at least a day or maybe two short, because if you count forward 21 days from June 11th, you get to July 2nd. And I think that there's going to be a lot of pressure, both from the public and from within the PC caucus, to have us move into stage two on Canada Day itself.
Right. That makes sense. Well, the government wants at least 70% of people with their first dose and 20% with their second dose before moving on to stage two. Have we got those numbers right?
Yes, that's exactly right. We have already hit that 70% number, by the way. And actually, by the time this gets to our listeners' ears, we should be about halfway to the second dose target. We were 9% as of Monday morning. It is likely that we are going to hit both benchmarks by, I would think, the end of next week. So something like Friday, June 18th, if not the Saturday, which would mean that we would be qualified for stage two with something like 2 weeks to spare, even if we did open a bit early. You know, there is still the possibility of some unpleasant surprise, because COVID has had lots of those for us over the last year and a bit. But right now, it is it's pretty hard to find an indicator in Ontario that is heading in the wrong direction. The one exception, and I have mentioned it before on the podcast, is a pretty severe outbreak in Timmins and James Bay in what's called the Porcupine Public Health Unit. They continue to have, in terms of per capita, they have really the most severe outbreak in the province right now. Just before we started recording this, I learned that it looks like actually the Porcupine PHU will not enter stage one with the rest of the province.
Hmm, interesting. Okay, one last thing on this. Did you find it odd? You know, this is a good day. Did you find it odd that such a big and apparently encouraging announcement, the premier did not have a news conference? None of his cabinet ministers went to a microphone on Monday? There was nothing.
I mean, it is pretty odd, given how many bad news announcements the premier has had to make lately. This would be one of those times I would assume that cabinet ministers would be, you know, fighting each other to get to be in front of a microphone, in front of a TV camera. But yeah, all we got was a press release, and then some cabinet members tripping over themselves to tweet out the news early on Twitter.
Right. Okay. Now, what we're going to talk about next, I'm going to go on record right now and promise our listeners, we're not going to be doing this every week for the next 52 weeks.
No.
Because I know there is a tendency among media to breathlessly report on every little nuance and how it affects the upcoming election campaign for the year preceding the campaign. But we're not going to do it. But we do want to note, this is a fairly significant anniversary on the calendar. We're a year away from, I guess, finding out who's going to form the next government of Ontario. More than likely, because, of course, there's always the possibility of a hung parliament that could require negotiations as to who'll form the next government. But basically, we're T-minus 1 year and counting until the 43rd general election. So where do things stand now?
You know, in the last few weeks, we have seen three horse race polls of Ontario politics from three different pollsters, in this case, Leger, Main Street, and Campaign Research. And they all show more or less the same picture. Their results agree pretty closely. The Tories are ahead in the polls, but bouncing around in, I guess you'd call it like the low to mid 30s, between 33 and 36%. Worth noting here that these are different pollsters than the ones who back in April showed the Liberals in the lead after people probably recall Premier Ford's really disastrous week early that month. You know, I think it's still fair to say that based on these polls, the PCs look down from where they were before that very bad week in April. But, you know, still ahead of the other three parties.
Now, let's ask about them. The NDP or the official opposition, have they been able to chip away at any of the government's support?
They don't seem to have yet. The NDP have been very stable for months now, which is both, you know, a plus and a minus. They seem to be bouncing around in the mid-20s. Not a ton that's new there. They don't seem to be making major inroads against the government, against the Progressive Conservatives. But they also don't seem to be losing support either to the Tories or to the Liberals or Greens either.
Well, I suppose it's worth mentioning that the NDP is rarely the place where people park their votes between elections. They are at where they usually are between campaigns. But when they do well, it's because they've usually caught fire during a campaign.
Yeah.
All of which is to say, it wouldn't surprise me if there's very little dynamism in the NDP vote over the next 11 months. And we do have to remember that a few weeks ago, pollster Greg Lyle from the Innovative Research Group was on the podcast, and he said one of the challenges for the Ontario Liberals is that people have no idea who their leader is. And we're actually going to have some of our own polling on that in the next couple of weeks. So stay tuned. Come back. Revisit us for that. But let's look at the third place party at the moment. Where do the Grits stand right now?
We mentioned there's this bunch of polls that we saw in April that showed the Liberals in the lead. These are different polls from different pollsters. And so they really show the Liberals basically neck and neck with the NDP, again, bouncing around in those mid-20s. I wouldn't necessarily expect these numbers to change hugely in the next month or the next 3 months. It's, really going to be the period in, a month to 3 months before the election where we might see some really significant swings.
Right. And how about Mike Schreiner and his Green Party?
Sort of a familiar story here for now. Never less than 5% and never more than 10. Regretfully for the Greens, I'm sure. There's some interesting stuff happening with the Green Party, and I think we should definitely talk about getting some representatives on the podcast because, they are recruiting new candidates, and I know we've had them on the agenda as well. They had the former environmental commissioner as a deputy leader now. Some interesting stuff happening with the Green Party. It just doesn't seem to be translating to popular support in the polls yet.
Well, having said that, the one comment you always hear about Mike Schreiner, the leader, is that he always punches above his weight.
Yes.
And considering he's only one lonely member in that Ontario legislature, that's saying something. Now, the most important thing I think we need to remind people of, and we may do this more than once as well over the next year, and that is, if I've said it once, I've said it 100 times, polls tell you what people thought yesterday. They are not predictive of what people will think tomorrow. So we've got a long way to go before the race truly crystallizes. Let's just remind everybody of that. Okay, JMM, you do know, because we've talked about this before, how amusing I find political advertising, right?
Is it like nails on a chalkboard for you?
Well, nails on a chalkboard, I think only halfway gets there because here's, okay, I'm not meaning to sound insulting here, but just some of the stuff that people in this province do to raise money for political parties sometimes. Well, here's the latest e-blast from the chair of the PC Ontario Fund. His name's Tony Miele, and he writes the following. This is in an e-blast that goes out to whoever is interested in following Ontario PC party politics. The Liberals left behind a legacy of 15 years of political corruption, higher taxes, and out-of-control hydro rates. It is a mess we are still cleaning up today. Can you imagine what would come from an NDP government? We're seeing that the NDP and Liberals are starting to prepare for next year by launching attack ads and hosting virtual rallies, and we cannot just stand by. And of course, after that, they go after my breathless and very dramatic rendering of that email blast, they go on to ask you for money. Now, a couple of things worth noting. First, the only party running attack ads right now are the provincial Conservatives, who are attacking the federal government for not closing the borders tightly enough. You can have a debate about whether they are or whether they aren't, but facts are facts, and right now, the only ones running attack ads on TV during the hockey games, which I watch every night, it's the PC party attacking Justin Trudeau. So that's number one. Second, and let me ask you this in the form of a question to you. One of the truisms in politics is, you got to know your enemy, right? It's not enough to know what you stand for. You got to know who you're going against. Who's your prime target? Does it look to you like the Tories know which one of their opponents is ultimately going to be their real enemy come election time?
It reads to me, or rather, I take from your extraordinary retelling of that email.
Thank you, sir. Shakespearean in my performance, wouldn't you say?
It reads to me like the Tories are, they're at least entertaining the idea that the NDP could remain their primary opposition in the next election. And I think some of the commentary about the election coming next year almost treated as a given that things will return to the mean in Ontario, that the Liberals will become the sort of default party for people who wanted to unseat the Tories. But if you take this email sort of at face value, and maybe we shouldn't, the Tories seem to at least be entertaining the idea that they may end up having to go hardest against the NDP. I think the warning that nothing is really settled a year out from an election is still a good one to remember here. I mean, and your point about the attack ads against the federal government, I mean, it's almost novel at this point for the progressive conservatives to attack a party that is actually going to be running in the next election because, you know, whatever one thinks about Justin Trudeau, I am 99% certain he is not going to be running to be an MPP next year one way or another. So maybe not the best use of campaign dollars.
You're only saying 99% sure, eh? You're just holding out the... You sound like that guy from Dumb and Dumber. So I've still got a chance. So you're saying I've got a chance.
You know, 2018 and 2020 were both really weird years.
Yeah, you got a point there. You got a point there. I just... let me add, you know, another 30 seconds on this, which is to say you really do in politics have to know who you're running against. You got to know who your enemy is, because I well remember in 1990... there was a massive Liberal majority government at Queen's Park, and they were so certain that the third place Conservatives were actually going to be their opponents that they took out a huge chunk of ads in the first part of that election campaign, you know, demonizing the Tories. And what they didn't realize was the public wasn't going to put the Tories back in. They just kicked the Tories out 5 years earlier. The party they should have been going up against was the NDP. They didn't, and the NDP just very, very quietly snuck up the middle while the Liberals were taking ads out, excoriating the Tories. Bob Rae's NDP went right up the middle and ended up winning on Election Day. And by the time the Liberals figured out, oh, darn, we should have been taking out ads against the NDP, election over, majority government for Bob Rae. So that's why it's important. Anyway, my two cents on that.
No, and I mean, we saw something similar, slightly different in 2018, where... you know, every time the Liberals hammered away at Doug Ford, the main effect was that the NDP's numbers increased, right? You know, if voters were not going to re-elect the Liberals in 2018 one way or another. And so that was in part why you saw Kathleen Wynne's campaign basically pivot towards attacking the NDP, because attacking Doug Ford simply was not helping Liberal fortunes at all.
There you go. Exactly. All right, let's also remind people that the legislature has now wrapped up for the season. The MPPs go on their summer break. Even though COVID has become, and rightfully so, the focus of a lot of the reporting at Queen's Park, there were actually other bills that were passed this year and that are going to make, you know, a splash in people's lives. So I'm going to have you take us through some of the highlights, the ones that are going to have the most impact on people. And let's start with highways. What can you tell us on that?
Minister of Transportation Carolyn Mulroney introduced a bill, the Moving Ontarians More Safely Act, or I suspect we're expected to read it as the Moms Act. and it does a few main things in the area of sort of road safety and transportation in general. There is language in there about increasing penalties for stunt racing and adopting new rules for electric bicycles. And one of the big things that it does is really overhaul the rules for the towing industry. I don't know how closely our listeners have been following the issues of the tow truck industry, but especially in the GTA, there's been some really incredible reporting and some very eye-opening investigations in terms of, you know, corruption and violence even in the tow truck industry. So the government is pretty clearly trying to tackle that with a big new law.
Now, frequent listeners to this podcast will know that I occasionally like to tease my co-host about what he does at 2 o'clock in the morning, which usually involves reading the Planning Act. So I raise this next issue because this one's right in your wheelhouse, McGrath, because it does include changes to the Planning Act. And it was brought in by the Red Tape Reduction Minister, Prabhmeet Sarkaria, and it's called the Supporting Recovery and Competitiveness Act. What's the 411 there?
Well, with a bill given that kind of a generic name, you know that it could touch almost anything. And this one almost does. It's more than 20 different schedules in the bill. And I really hate to disappoint our eager listeners, but the stuff about the Planning Act is so arcane. Even I haven't been able to quite parse it all out, and I'm not going to try and do that live on a hot mic. you know, in some ways, it's the kind of normal piece of legislation you would see in any other time, like in pre-COVID times. It's certainly I can remember Liberal bills that were about business-friendly changes to regulation that just touched all sorts of things. It is what you would call an omnibus bill, pardon me. It does change so many different bills. But, you know, I would say there's the business-friendly stuff. There is some COVID response in there, some changes to legislation that, you know, because so much has changed and so much in government has had to change because of COVID. And then there's some very sort of technical bookkeeping stuff, like the Planning Act stuff. It is not exactly the most enthralling piece of legislation we've seen since COVID started, but you know there are lots of bits and pieces in there that for businesses all over the province could end up being very important.
Now, some bills got passed in this past session, and some other bills got just newly introduced right before the legislature wrapped up. Anything we should have our eye on when the MPPs come back in September?
Well, you do know how we love our independent officers of the legislature on this podcast.
Oh, yes, indeed I do. The Auditor General, the Financial Accountability Officer, the Ombudsman. We can't get enough of them here, JMM.
So Liberal MPP John Fraser has introduced a bill to add someone to their number, the Patient Ombudsman. Listeners may remember that Christine Elliott was the province's first Patient Ombudsman for a time before she returned to electoral politics in 2018. And when the Liberal government of Kathleen Wynne created that position, they expressly decided not to make it an officer of the legislature, the way the auditor, ombudsman, and FAO are. The distinction here is basically that the government can the government cannot fire an officer of the legislature without a big full vote in, you know, at Queen's Park. But in theory, people who work for the government, like the patient ombudsman, can be dismissed. There are legal protections, et cetera, et cetera. But Fraser's bill would change that, would make the patient ombudsman a formal officer of the legislature, an independent officer. But of course, it's an opposition private member's bill. These very, very rarely become law. So it may go nowhere, or it might come back. It might see the light of day if Liberals form the next government. That kind of thing has happened before.
Right. Any other thing that you want to put on our agenda that the MPPs got up to before they went home to their ridings for the summer?
Well, I do know that some MPPs do listen to this podcast, and I think some of them would be irritated at us if I didn't at least mention that one of the last votes in the last few weeks of the session was to extend the government's sort of COVID emergency powers. Legislature was presented with a motion that extends the powers until December 31st of this year. That is basically, you know, it extends orders that were already in place, and it lets the government sort of tinker with those orders. In principle, the government could, you know, use that power very broadly. The government says this is just about managing the reopening process over the next several months. But certainly some opposition MPPs said that, you know, this was a dramatic extension of the power. You know, in theory, it lets the government make orders, abrogating certain labor rights, that kind of thing. So the opposition opposed it. They are, of course, in the minority, so the government won the vote, and at least some of those powers could be still being used until the end of December of this year.
Good enough. There we go. All right. We always conclude this podcast with our favorite quotes of the week, and we will have those for you immediately after we ask you, as we always do, to give us a rating on Apple Podcasts. We'd sure like to know what you think about this little venture that we're up to here.
You can also shoot us an email at onpolitics@tvo.org.
Here now is my quote of the week, and we are going back to last week and the schools. There were questions from members of the media as to why the government has decided in its wisdom that there cannot be any more in-class education to the end of this school year, which of course ends in June. You're going to hear two voices here. The first, reporter Chris Rashoe, and then Premier Doug Ford with the answer.
Why is it that other provinces can reopen schools but Ontario can't?
Well, we're really, when it comes to all the different provinces, there's no comparison to any province in the entire country like Ontario. We're 15 million people. The closest is Quebec at 8.5 million. But all the rest are 1/4 of our size and probably 1/10 our size. They don't have 134,000 people, 134,000 people crossing their land borders. They don't have 30, 40, 50,000 flights coming in to the largest airport in Pearson. They don't have Buffalo Airport as their second international border, that thousands of people are flying into Buffalo, taking a taxi, walking across the border, which is unheard of. And again, implore the federal government to tighten up the borders.
That's Premier Doug Ford last week on why the schools will not reopen until the fall.
And my quote of the week is from Minister of Health and Deputy Premier Christine Elliott, who was asked by CTV's Colin DeMello about whether the government was going to announce an earlier reopening on Monday morning. And here's what she told Colin on Monday.
Is it going to be the 11th of June, Minister?
Well, I can tell you that that's something that we're looking at. We're still looking at the numbers, and the numbers are looking quite favorable, but there's still other factors that we have to take into consideration. So that's something that we're going to be considering today. Today in our meetings with Cabinet.
That was Minister of Health Christine Elliott. And, you know, I picked that clip in part because it's sort of newsy, and also because then as the government announced the reopening, reporters were given an embargoed copy of the press release and we stuck to the embargo, and then a bunch of cabinet ministers didn't. And I found that really funny on Monday. And it all sort of just played out there in public. And sometimes that's fun to watch too.
It's funny when reporters stick to the rules and cabinet ministers don't, eh? Yeah.
Well, they get to make the rules, I guess, so.
I guess. Well, that was episode 115 of the On Poly podcast, produced by Katie O'Connor and Matthew O'Mara, editing from Donnie Swanson, who, like me, needs a haircut pretty badly. We also got production support from Nikki Ashworth and Jonathan Halliwell. JMM, as my dad likes to say, stay positive, test negative.
Stay safe, Steve.